W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Classes on the Michigan State University campus won't resume until Monday after last night's shooting leaves three students dead and five seriously wounded. The suspect is dead after turning the gun on himself. CBS Detroit reporter Chris Laudine.
University police said sophomore Brian Fraser and junior Alexandria Verner were two of the three students killed. Officials say McCray, who had no known ties to the university, took his own life following a three-hour standoff miles from the campus.
I know everybody wants to know what the motive is. We don't have an answer right now, and that's the honest truth.
According to state prosecutors, the suspect had previously been on probation for possessing a loaded gun. Officials say he also had a history of mental health problems.
In Parkland, Florida, the community gathered tonight to mark 5 years since the deadly shooting rampage at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. The lone gunman killed 14 students and three staff members. The Biden administration still isn't sure what the U.S. military shot down in recent days over the skies of Lake Huron, northern Alaska, and Canada's Yukon, because the recovery efforts are being complicated by weather and the remote locations. CBS's Cammy McCormick.
The National Security Council's John Kirby said the FAA, the intelligence community, and military pilots are all being asked to help identify what the objects may have been, but finding debris is important.
Still want to recover it because that's our best way of knowing for sure what these things were.
In the meantime, he says one possibility is they were tied to research facilities and could be, as he called it, totally benign.
A Missouri judge overturns the wrongful murder conviction of a man who spent nearly 28 years in prison for a killing that he has always said he did not commit. KMOV-TV's Russell Kinsall was there when 50-year-old Lamar Johnson walked out of court.
Supporters were jubilant at the announcement, including his ex-girlfriend and the mother of Johnson's daughter.
I knew that it would. I just had trust and faith in God. I didn't expect for it to be this long, but God does things in his own time. And it doesn't matter. He's free. He's a free man. He gets to be with his children and his mom. And that's all that matters.
I spoke with a couple of supporters of Johnson's who said in the last couple of days they've gone out to buy a bunch of clothes, all the things he'll need to start this new life that he's beginning from scratch.
Police are revealing new details into a U-Haul driver's frame of mind after veering onto sidewalks and ramming into pedestrians and cyclists in New York City yesterday, killing at least one person and injuring eight others. NYPD Chief of Detectives James Essig.
He states when he's driving his van, he sees an invisible object come towards the car. And at that point, he says, "I've had enough." And he goes on his rampage.
The driver is charged with murder and attempted murder. On Wall Street, stocks closed mixed. This is CBS News.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Big money from outside Wisconsin could push spending on this spring's Wisconsin Supreme Court race north of $7 million by next week's primary. That puts the race well on its way to breaking the record $10 million spent on the 2020 campaign. The outcome of the election will likely decide whether the high court tilts conservative or liberal. Governor Evers wants to spend $290 million on upkeep at American Family Field over the next 20 years to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee. The governor's one-time payment to the baseball park district is part of his state budget proposal. The money would come out of Wisconsin's $7 billion surplus. In sports, the Bucks go for their 11th win in a row tonight at home against Boston. The Badgers host Michigan. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bride.
J.R. Radcliffe is coming back to the show. The timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in a welfare scam in Mississippi.
Brett Favre's camp has denied all wrongdoing. Like, he really feels like he did nothing wrong. So I guess he's a little burned by that.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bride. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I gotta tell you, it's one of those things, you know, the Republican Party tells us how much they love the children. They love the unborn. You remember Tom DeLay, the hammer, the Speaker of the House, years ago when he said that, you know, we wouldn't need immigrants if we just, you know, forced women to have children because we'd have cheap labor. We wouldn't need that cheap labor to immigrate. We could just force people to have it right here. And look, you know, 16 years later, look at what they're doing. You know, nice words. We love the children. We care about protecting the children. We love the babies. But their actions. That's what we need to be paying attention to. And I look at, again, you know, what we've seen in Missouri, what we've seen in Florida and Iowa. What is wrong with Iowa? And here to share some thoughts on some of the craziness that we've talked about over the last several weeks from Iowa, I've asked Sammy Sheets to come talk with us. He's an Iowa state representative, one of the folks that we met along our Working Class Heroes tour. Sammy, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Good to see you back again. Congrats on your victory. I know when we were there, there was some nail biting, so congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Let's jump into this. I mean, you know, we've been talking about this for a while. I've been saying for years that Republicans want to move us back to the days of the Lochner era, where if you were hungry enough and desperate enough to work in poverty conditions for desperation wages, that was your liberty. Only we were going to couch it in terms of freedom. It seems we're right here because in your state, we're talking about putting kids back into dangerous jobs again as early as 14. How crazy is that?
It's insane. I did not think in the first few weeks of me being here in the legislature, it would be returning to some of the policies that Upton Sinclair decried over 120 years ago when he was doing his incredible work. I mean, it's heartless. We want to get our kids, instead of having them educated and getting ready for whatever career that is, whether it's continuing education, going to university, or whether that's joining the trades, which we need tons of that work here in Iowa as well. Republicans are saying to kids, you know what, screw education, it's time for you to get back to work in the coal mines and other meatpacking plants, really dangerous work that children should not be doing. That's why we passed child labor laws a long, long time ago. And it's just really, really unfortunate to see Republicans going after the most vulnerable people in our society, and that's our kids. And that's because, frankly, they're unwilling to pass real policies that would do good for working people. Instead of paying higher wages, raising our minimum wage to $15 an hour and providing some sort of economic stability for working people in the state, they've decided to go back to the most far-right agenda, which is getting kids working in extremely dangerous conditions that would be in the classroom, which they should be doing at 14 years old.
Yeah, now I was told, when I talked about this, you know, back when it broke, I had a bunch of people reaching out to me going, oh, you're being hyperbolic. We would never allow kids to do dangerous jobs. We'd never let 14-year-olds to do that kind of work. In your words, how bad is this? I mean, I went through and I went through what the article said and I read the legislation. It's not good. In your words, how bad is this?
It's really bad. No, I mean, people can go, you can look up on our Iowa legislative website. You can read the bill for yourself, or you can go, you know, I usually trust the words of of labor unions, because I think they have the best interests of workers at heart, and they've been vehemently against this legislation since the day it dropped in the Iowa legislature, because it's bad for Iowans, it's bad for workers, and it's obviously bad for kids, because we shouldn't be conflating 14-year-olds with workers at that point. So it's really dangerous. It's, you know, not the only really bad thing for working people the Republicans have been trying to pass. They've, as I know you've talked about in the past on your show, instead of helping working people, like I said, they're doing the opposite. They want to gut SNAP benefits to some of the most vulnerable and hungry Iowans in our state under the guise of freedom and efficiency and cutting the waste out of government. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. They wanted to actually, which is insane because we're in one of the most agriculturally dependent states in the country, they wanted to ban Iowans from using their SNAP benefits to buy American cheese and fresh meat. I mean, just think about, from a political sense, how stupid that is, beyond the fact that it's incredibly harmful to working families.
Well, that's the point to me, Sammy. I mean, you know, I'm looking at what you guys are doing around education. I'm looking at what you're doing around these SNAP benefits. I'm looking at what you're doing around child labor law. And, you know, when I started off this saying, look, they want to take us back to the Lochner era. They want workers desperate. They want people, you know, on the edge of starving, so they will take desperation jobs. It seems like this is all part of a grand scheme. And I hate to sound conspiratorial, but what is when you're destroying the lines to get an education, when you're destroying the lines to be able to put food in a kid's belly, and then going, hey, we've got this great job over here that we're going to give corporate America waivers and shields so that no one's liable. I don't know where else to go with this.
Yep, and that's another key point that you're bringing up is the liability. Not only do they want kids to be able to go back into meatpacking plants and coal mines, they want to shield employers from the risks and dangers of having such, you know, young people, frankly kids, doing this really dangerous work. So they want to have their cake and eat it too, which is obviously what wealthy corporations are trying to do all the time. But no, you're right. The whole host of legislation. We had a $1 billion school voucher bill passed a couple weeks ago. We just cut benefits of people that are, you know, the victims of medical malpractice in this state. Every chance that our state government has to attack working families, they are going at 100 miles an hour and taking as many rights and benefits away from workers in the state as they can. I mean, this has been a trend, as you know, since 2017 when they gutted collective bargaining in our state, which used to be the golden standard across the United States, was our bipartisan collective bargaining agreement here in the state of Iowa. And since then, they have just taken every opportunity to put workers down. And it's just disgusting, frankly.
Now, back to the child labor thing, because, you know, I said during my rant the first time when this came up that, look, it's not going to be my children, not going to be kids that look like mine. These are going to be poor kids. These are going to be immigrant kids, because the story that came out of the meatpacking plants in your state, that they were literally working, you know, 13, 14-year-olds on the kill floor overnight before they went to school. It's going to be those kids. Let's be clear on who we're talking about, which is why I think they can get away with it. It's not going to be their neighbors. It's not going to be wealthy people who send their kids to the voucher private schools. It's going to be poor and working class kids who are going to have to do this. It's going to be families who are struggling to make ends meet. That's who we're really talking about.
Of course. And, you know, as I talked about on the last time I was on your show, the Republicans had no issue last session doing a $300 million tax cut for wealthy corporations and a tax cut for some of the wealthiest Iowans. And then in the same breath, this is not just an Iowa playbook, this is obviously a national GOP playbook, in the same breath saying, oh my God, guys, we're running out of money. Let's go attack the most basic fundamental services that the most vulnerable people in our state rely on. I'm trying to find some bright spots here. It's obviously hard given the list of legislation that you've been going through. But, you know, obviously we dealt with the meatpacking plants where managers at our meatpacking plants during COVID were literally having bets on how many of their workers were going to die as a result of the unsafe practices that we had in our meatpacking plants. The good news is that we've seen in Columbus Junction, there's a meatpacking plant that has already, you know, it's not completely gone through yet, but they're actually having real positive signs of unionization, which is obviously really, really hard to do at a meatpacking plant, and extremely hard when the vast majority of those workers are African and Mexican immigrants. To your point, The problem with, you know, these corporate interests is they take advantage of some of the most marginalized people, and that tends to be immigrant communities who do not have the recourse or the know-how of what their rights are or what they can and can't do and what an employer, how an employer can treat them. So it's really exciting to see that plant might potentially unionize. And actually our UFCW local in Eastern Iowa, where that plant is an immigrant from the Congo, and somebody who understands the immigrant experience and understands how we can get organized labor, which is a traditionally, you know, let's be honest, a traditionally more white, older structure, and integrate that and build a multiracial working class coalition. That's what we need in this state, and that's what we need everywhere across the country. So I am excited on a positive note to see some of that organizing going on here in the state.
No, we absolutely need it. And look, Iowa's a no rights at work state. You know, the sad reality is what it is. Republicans have gotten through a lot of their legislation. And look, you go down the list. It just seems cruel. And I say this all the time. I do believe the cruelty is the point. The more harsh they can make these things, the more desperate they can make people. And I know this, and I hate to think this way, but it just seems like that's the cruelty being the point when you're talking about, sorry, you can't have white bread or any other kind. You got to have only one kind of bread. You can't have flavored yogurt. You can only have, you know, this yogurt. When you get down to the minute detail of what food you can put on your table, it's incredible to me. But these folks will do this without conscience, without shame.
Without blinking an eye. Without blinking an eye. Trying to get some positive notes out there, I'm proposing legislation. We'll see if it goes anywhere. There's a Double Up Food Bucks program that basically incentivizes buying grocery, you know, healthier foods and groceries. And that was the only good part of that really terrible House File 3 bill, that is the SNAP's bill, is that did have language for that Double Up's food bill, food program. And so I'm trying to take that one good piece and create it as a standalone piece of legislation. And we'll see, you know how politics works. If they liked it in that bill, whether they're like it as a standalone bill, but we just have to be doing something for working people, Rick. I mean, these are people that went through economically devastating pandemic. Then we have 40-year record high inflation. I see this, people, my constituents see that when you go to the gas station, the grocery store, your dollar is not going as far as it did a year ago. And what does our state government decide is the recourse to fix or to help working people? It's to attack them and put them down. That's not a government that serves people. And I know why I ran for office and go up to the state capitol every day. It's because I want to make working people's lives better. And I am really hoping that some of my colleagues change course and decide to start actually working in the interests of working class people in the state.
Now, that is the hope. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Iowa State Representative Sammy Sheets talking about all of the attacks that are going on in Iowa as part of the Republican playbook. Again, you're not the outlier here. This stuff has been going from state to state to state. And I would argue probably very little of the legislation that's being rammed down the Iowa citizen's throat was actually probably written by these folks, comes out of those horrible think tanks. The other thing that I saw, again, right now states are hell-bent on limiting women's right to choose, limiting their ability to track. I mean, I look at what they're doing in Florida, wanting law enforcement to be able to check, you know, your teenage daughter's menstrual cycle app because, oh, well, we might find something. It seems like, again, you know, these private decisions, these private choices being legislated, and I think you just told me that something on the contraception front is probably coming down the road.
No. Oh, yeah. Yep. So they want to ban that teaching. I mean, here's the good news, Rick, is that Iowa abortion is still legal right now, but we've already seen the Republicans ran in the last campaign in 2022, and they said we would never ban abortion outright in our state.
Yeah. That's how dare you accuse me of those things?
How dare you accuse us? But guess what we found out 1 week ago is that multiple Republicans in our legislature proposed a bill that would ban abortion completely in the state of Iowa. So they just straight up lied. They lied to the people of the state. And then when they come and try and say, well, people support this. Nope, you did not run on that. You did not run on that platform. When I went on doors and I talked to people about some of the most important issues that they were hearing, I heard about inflation, obviously. And the second thing I always heard about was reproductive rights. And even, you know, I would talk to a lot of conservatives on the door, and I would say, there's so many people that talked to me and said, you know, I might not choose an abortion in my life and not be my, it might not be my first choice, but I do not think the government has a right to tell me what to do with my body. That is a fundamental conservative or libertarian principle, is that I should have freedom from government to make the most important choices in my life. So who the hell thinks, a small government conservative thinks, that the government should be in your doctor's office making the most important healthcare decision you will make in your life? And that is an issue that resonated not just with liberal Democrats, but with moderates and conservatives across the board. People think that is a fundamental human right that they should have. And that's why you see in a state like Kansas, abortion rights winning by 20% in a deep red state. This is a fundamental human right. And if they try and attack that right, we're going to be fighting them every single step of the way here at the Capitol.
The hope is that you're fighting on all of these fronts. But the sad reality is the moneyed interest, and I go back to this, and you probably see it every day, the big moneyed interests who are pushing this agenda, they want this. They want desperate workers. As we're bringing manufacturing back, as we're demanding that we reshore our supply lines, what they want is they want the cheap labor that they were getting over in China. They want it here. They want desperation here, and this is how they're going to go about getting it.
Yeah, and they wanted, I mean, we've talked before, Rick, about the horrible trade policies. This is more of a federal issue, but the horrible trade policies that our federal government, Democrat and Republican, passed for 30 years that forced American workers to compete with people that are making 50 cents an hour in China or in Eastern Asia. It's wrong. American workers should not be forced to compete with people who have no labor standards or practices. And so one of the really good things on a federal level is that the Biden administration is, for the first time in a long time, taking reinvesting in American manufacturing seriously. And yep. I can give you a local example. The CHIPS Act is going to bring hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs to the state of Iowa to reinvigorate, to rebuild our manufacturing sector. That is huge. That is what we need. We're going to have environmental investment from the Inflation Reduction Act. That's going to create jobs to rebuild our state's infrastructure and our nation's infrastructure in an environmentally friendly way. This is what we need. We need American investment in manufacturing. And that is not what we are getting from Republicans who are willing to open up our trade policies, send jobs overseas, and most heinously incentivize companies with our tax code and tax structure to send these jobs overseas. It's wrong.
Yep.
Wrong.
No, I've been saying all along, we need to rebuild, revive and reunionize this country. And it starts with, you know, the CHIPS and the Inflation Reduction Act. And it's good to hear that you're seeing this. Lastly, I want to ask you, is that message getting out? Is it reverberating to the people that you're talking about? Because I find that we haven't seen enough messaging around, there's some massive investment coming. There's some transformational investment coming to places like Iowa with rural broadband. Because look, I drove across the state. You guys don't have very good broadband, don't have very good access to the internet. This would be transformational for your state.
I mean, this is a longer discussion, but fundamentally, I think that Iowans and a lot of people in the upper Midwest don't believe that the Democratic Party is fighting for working people. For 100 years, this was a party that was centered on workers and the working class.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, whether you think it's right or wrong, over the past decade or so, people in my state, people that I talked to that were Democrats their entire lives, that voted for Barack Obama twice and then voted for Donald Trump. Go talk to anybody on the eastern part of our state on the Mississippi River. Those are all Obama-Trump counties. They do not believe in their heart that Democrats are going to go and fight for them. That is something that's bigger than one issue, one message. That is a fundamental mistrust in our party. They view our party as elitist, that we look down on them. And so, you know, before we can start winning anything of note in this state, we have to fix that. And we have to build trust in these communities and show people, hey, this is what the Republicans are doing. They cut your minimum wage. They cut your collective bargaining rights and your ability to organize as workers. They gut your public education system that was the best in the country a decade ago. They attack workers, immigrants, everybody that's marginalized in our state, every chance they get. And that's why when you go to rural Iowa, as you drove through, you see the decimation of our rural ecosystem.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
Our decisions in the state capital have consequences, and we have to go to these communities and build trust and show them what real Democrats fight for. They fight for workers. They fight for working people. They fight for better wages, for unions. That's what Democrats are about, and we have to convince people that that's the case.
If we can only take Sammy Sheets and clone you and bang out a bunch of you across the country, we might have a chance. Sammy, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great fight there. Love to have you back again real soon to tell us what's going on and keep us up to date on all of this insanity.
Thank you so much, Rick. Have a good evening.
Good stuff. Appreciate the time, Sammy. Sammy Sheets, Iowa State Representative. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Again, you know, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. All the things we were just talking about. Look at this. You think that's okay? Seriously. Kids back in the mines, starving families, stealing education money. Wow. Back after this.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember last year, Elon Musk dared the United Auto Workers Union to unionize a Tesla shop. He tweeted out, "I'd like hereby to invite UAW to hold a union vote at their convenience. Tesla will do nothing to stop them." Well, Tesla workers in Buffalo, New York have announced that they intend to form a union. That union, the Workers United Upstate New York, they are going to be collecting cards and are aggressively pushing toward joining and forming a union. What are their demands? Well, they would like better wages like everyone. They would like, a say on the job. In fact, in their statement, they said, "We are only asking for a seat in the car that we help build." Makes sense. They also want to be treated better by management. They want job security so they can't be fired for any reason or no reason whatsoever. One of the main reasons that you have a labor contract, the end of at-will employment. And they want Tesla to stop or to at least curb some of their monitoring practices. You know, like looking over your shoulder every minute of every day, to the point to where, you know, people aren't even going to the bathroom because they're being followed and challenged and all kinds of stuff along the way. And this is the kind of work environment that a lot of people that I've talked to complain about, that every moment of their day is micromanaged and observed and watched and they're challenged and, well, not challenged, they're coached. They're coached. They're coached, you know, to do things better, like, you know, wear diapers instead of going to the bathroom. In the bathroom. For me, this is going to be interesting because Musk has seriously aggressively resisted unionization efforts at other places. The fact that he has come out publicly and said, we won't do anything. That's going to be interesting because I can't imagine that he's not going to go on his Twitter and attack these workers. I can't imagine that he's not going to do what you see corporate America do at every turn. Harass, intimidate, threaten. Because after all, look, he's a gazillionaire. one of the wealthiest people on the planet. And where we started today, big money, they don't care about suffering. They don't care about misery. They don't care about you. They care about big money. They care about power and control. So this.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
CBS News Brief. Classes on the Michigan State University campus are canceled for the rest of the week after 3 students die and 5 are seriously injured in a shooting. Police say the suspect took his own life. CBS Detroit reporter Chris Laudin on the MSU campus.
Students at Michigan State University painted the words, "How many more?" on a campus landmark following Monday's mass shooting.
It just needs to stop because this shouldn't have happened. It didn't need to happen.
The origins of 3 flying objects shot down last weekend are still unknown, and recovery efforts are complicated by weather. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
We're going to try to get as much debris as we can because we know that that's the best way for us to do the forensics on these objects.
At least 3 people have died and thousands are displaced after a cyclone in New Zealand. Emergency Management Minister Kieran McInulty.
Cyclone Gabrielle has moved off the coast of New Zealand, which means we, thankfully, are through the worst of the storm. But we're not out of danger yet.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
4 Civic Media, I'm Jane Netnair. Here's what you need to know. If you saw a string of lights in the skies over Wisconsin last night, you can relax. It wasn't aliens or spy balloons, but rather, according to TMJ4 News, the Starlink satellite chain, owned by Elon Musk's company SpaceX. It provides internet access to dozens of countries. A number of people called to report the lights, especially after Madison-based fighter jets shot down an unidentified object over Lake Huron on Sunday, the 4th one taken down in the last 8 days. Governor Evers will release his budget proposal to the GOP-controlled legislature tomorrow. Among the items in the budget, increased funding for veterans and surviving spouses and $290 million in upkeep at AmFam Field over the next 20 years to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee. The one-time payment to the Baseball Park District would come out of Wisconsin's $7 billion surplus. I'm Jane Matinere. This is Civic Media News.
Wisconsin's spring primary election is Tuesday, February 21st, and your local Civic Media radio station will be tracking the results.
Special live coverage starts at 7 p.m., and News Director Terry Bell, with a team of political experts, will be following which candidates, both local and in the state Supreme Court race, move on to April.
Spring primary election coverage live, Tuesday, February 21st, starting at 7, here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
As goes Wisconsin.
Mandela Barnes, future runs. Not yes, not no.
You know, I'm not closing the door, right? Like, taking a loss is not easy. And it's tough, too, when it's such a razor-thin margin. You know, I know some people who just get up right away and decide they want to run again. Like, yeah. I'm not there. But, you know, it's all timing.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Earl Ingram.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, anybody who's heard Congresswoman Bobart from Colorado and Marjorie Taylor Greene and others, you just have to ask the question, if I'm a Republican, why would I continue to support that foolishness?
Asking the tough questions, searching for the answers we're all looking for. The Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings 8 to 11 on Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
TheConsumerVoice.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Sunday, the big Super Bowl game, there were some ads that caught my attention. And look, it's gotten a lot of play on social media. And to be honest, I had no problems with the He Gets Us ads. They were what religion and Christianity and Jesus should be. Everyone coming together, everyone eating around the table together, caring about compassion. You know, again, how I grew up in the Catholic Church talking about, you know, peace and social justice. This is where this was in my wheelhouse. So I had no qualms with it. It's a nice message. It's great. In a time when we're as divided as we are, this could be something that unites us. The interesting thing for me, though, is when I looked into the group, oddly enough, the people who have caused the division, the people who are pushing the anti-LGBTQ agenda, all of the divisive stuff, they're the ones behind this. And it's just the weirdest kind of moment where I'm going, explain this. And that's why I've reached out to my next guest who, in this circle, the expert that I reach out to. That's why I've asked Lisa Graves to come talk with us. She's the executive director of True North Research. They are a corporate watchdog group. Their website, truenorthresearch.org, if you want to see the work that they do. Lisa, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much, Rick. And I just have to say about the Super Bowl that I was rooting for the Eagles, and that last call was terrible, but I just can't let that go. But thanks for having me on.
No, I'm with you. It was a horrible call. Yeah. And that's one of those things where the ball wasn't even catchable. And this is why I'm advocating for there to be in the last 5 minutes of a game replays. We should have a replay on bad calls.
Yep, I agree. See, we agree on that too.
But here's the thing. You know, did you see the Super Bowl ads put out by this group? Yeah. Did you have any problem with the ads?
Well, the content was very compassionate. If I didn't know who was funding it, I would have had no concern at all about it, because the message was so positive, a very positive PR, very positive public relations messaging.
Yeah, now I looked into them, and they've got a lot of these really nice, great ads. We find out, though, that they're going to spend $100 million on this media buy to push this kind of messaging, $20 million of it, obviously, during the Super Bowl. And again, as you point out, you know, these are. Let me ask, who's behind this? Let's start there. Who's behind it?
So that's the real story, I think, behind the ads. And I think it's a question of, you know, we've seen this in a lot of other areas over the years. We've seen it very recently by Charles Koch. There's a lot of money that goes into what people have called whitewashing or greenwashing, or what I've called greed washing. This is actually one of the first times I've seen it deployed in sort of a faith setting, where that message in that Super Bowl ad is so at odds with the actions of some of the main funders or grant recipients of the organization that launched this, which is called the Servant Foundation. It operates out of Kansas. It's a 501c3 nonprofit. And just, you know, sort of two examples, I can break them into two parts, Rick. One in terms of who funds it or who's known to have funded it, and another into what that funding has gone into. So where do you want me to begin?
Well, I want to know who's putting $100 million into this. And the other question that I always have, how much is this costing us, the taxpayers?
Well, so we know that one of the big funders of the Servant Foundation has been David Green and the Green Family Fortune. That's the fortune that has come out of the Hobby Lobby stores that are these, you know, big box stores in communities across the country, providing, you know, hobby supplies. And the people who lead that corporation have helped fund the Servant Foundation. But that's not all. They were central to a Supreme Court case that was decided a few years ago. It's actually been in the news again lately. That was called the Hobby Lobby case. And in that case, what the Greens did through their lawyers was assert that their corporation basically had a right, a religious right. The ordinary, you know, in an ordinary setting, you would think that only human beings have religious rights, not corporations. But in this instance, they were asserting that the corporation Hobby Lobby had a religious right to block access to contraceptives of its the people who work for it. In essence, it was a challenge to the Affordable Care Act, which was passed during the Obama administration to provide healthcare access for millions of Americans, including access to routine contraceptive devices. And Hobby Lobby fought that provision of the ACA. And with this very closely divided, very partisan Supreme Court, in an opinion by Samuel Alito, the court struck down what was called the contraception mandate. And it did so at the behest of Green's corporation. so that it would not be allowing or basically providing healthcare insurance access to the people who are checking you out of the counter for contraceptives that the Greens and their corporation said was against their religious beliefs. Now, you know, interestingly, I've, you know, actually read the Bible from front to back, from the beginning to the end. And, you know, it doesn't actually talk about contraception. It doesn't talk about, you know, obviously IUDs weren't invented there, nor the pill. But, you know, it's not something where there's a clear mandate like in the Ten Commandments that, you know, women can't have access to contraception. But that's, in essence, the case that they made, that they had a religious right to make that determination themselves, what their religious beliefs involve. And it involves being against contraception. And so the ruling they won allowed Hobby Lobby and other companies to deny the women who work for them that sort of contraceptive access that they had opposed. But, you know, that's not all. I would be remiss, Rick, if I didn't mention that Hobby Lobby was Hobby Lobby and the, you know, family corporation, in essence, was found to have been taking artifacts from the Middle East, in essence, stealing artifacts in the Middle East, a huge number, quantity of artifacts, religious artifacts and historical artifacts. And, you know, having read the Bible and having read lots of portions of it, verses that I love, you know, one of them that I know everyone probably knows is, you know, thou shalt not steal. That's actually a mandate, you know, in the Bible.
It's one of those rules.
But that seemed to be non-binding in that instance. But for the women who work for them, it's a different story. So that's part of the backstory on Green and Hobby Lobby.
Yeah, the contraception one was on the other five commandments that Mel Brooks dropped in the movie. You know, have 15, no, 10 commandments. Yeah,
that's a great movie. Yeah,
maybe that's where it was. But here's the thing, and this is where I come back to, you know, when they throw out these really nice ads, they were well done, very convincing. On the surface, they look sane and rational. But the sad reality is, in this country, we've got some extremists. We've got people who, you know, religious zealots who want a version of Sharia law being imposed on women. And I got to tell you, it's as the father of daughters, it's frightening what the future holds for them.
Well, it is. You know, I am very troubled by this development in the law and in our culture, because, you know, I believe that one of the core freedoms of a human being is freedom of conscience. And that includes the right to marry who you love. What could be more fundamental to being a human being than to be able to marry another adult you love? And yet we know that the Servant Foundation has funded groups that have attacked gay marriage, have attacked this basic, you know, civil right. It's also a religious right, but it's a civil right to be married by the state. And they've also been instrumental in funding a group called Alliance Defending Freedom. That's the way the right wing sort of brings in the word freedom. Alliance Defending Freedom has devoted a substantial amount of efforts to destroying the freedom, reproductive freedom of women. In fact, we know from our research that ADF helped craft the Mississippi law that was at issue in the Dobbs decision, where the Supreme Court last year overturned more than 49 years of legal precedent to destroy the constitutional right to access abortion. And we know from that research that it was Josh Hawley's wife, Senator Josh Hawley's wife, Erin Hawley, who played a behind-the-scenes role in helping to craft that litigation. She wasn't on the briefs before the Supreme Court, but after the fact, even though the same thing had been pitched as a local, you know, super local initiative in Mississippi, it really was orchestrated by Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF is also at the heart, as I mentioned, of efforts to attack gay rights in America, the rights of LGBTQ Americans to be free from discrimination. And in fact, the Southern Poverty Law Center has called ADF a hate group based on its activities.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Lisa Graves. She's the executive director of True North Research. They're a corporate watchdog group. If you want to check out the work they do, truenorthresearch.org. Now, Jane sent me an email here during the break telling us that we've missed the point. She reads the ad as the tagline being, "Jesus loved the people we hate. He gets us." As their tagline, she reads this as, this group is talking to the people that are causing the division, not the honest people of faith. I'm curious if there's a possibility that we're misreading what they're trying to say. And again, this is kind of, I look at this stuff and they leave things so vague that it's up open to interpretation, like a lot of things, that you read into it what you want. And Jane clearly reads into this as that the ad was talking to people who are the haters, not the people who are being hated. Do you see that in this campaign?
Well, I think that's, you know, that is what the words say. And so I always try to go with what the words say. And I think, as you pointed out at the beginning, Rick, the message of the ads is very positive. It's that these ads come in the aftermath of the role that this foundation has played in funding legal discrimination, efforts to legally discriminate against gay people. In that Masterpiece Cake case that came out of Colorado, that's one of the cases that they were involved in. That's basically a baker saying, I refuse to make, you know, cakes for gay couples. We saw that happen in, I think it was Tennessee, when there was a county clerk who was refusing to file the certifications of marriage
Kentucky.
In that county because her personal beliefs were against it. We've seen pharmacists say that they won't dispense the pill. You know, these are civil jobs, civil society jobs. They're not working at a church. They're working in ordinary society. And they're basically saying, I can use my faith to discriminate against you. And that is, you know, something that I think is, you know, very troubling. And ADF has really been at the forefront of turning the shield of religious freedom into a sword. That freedom of conscience into a sword to attack the rights of other people. And I think that's really troubling. And so the ad itself, you know, as you pointed out, and I think as Jane reads it, is a positive ad about harmony and unity. But in fact, the group that, you know, funded this ad has also funded, you know, one of the most funded the efforts to achieve one of the most divisive rulings in Supreme Court history, that Dobbs decision. And the guy who helped fund this group, Green, you know, is the guy at the center of this other big decision at the Supreme Court, the Hobby Lobby decision. And, you know, as an aside, because it was in the news, what was in the news was that there was a whole effort by right-wing Christian activists that was exposed by Rob Schenck, who's a longtime anti-abortion activist who's, you know, become a more whistleblower. But he revealed that there was a multi-year effort to basically influence the U.S. Supreme Court and the members of the Supreme Court through the Supreme Court Historical Society. They even were operating out of a townhome, these brick buildings in D.C., behind the U.S. Supreme Court, going to all these events, schmoozing with these justices. And as a result of that, you know, people like Alito were going on, you know, trips with fabulously wealthy people to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And even though he denied this leak, The newspaper that broke the story took months to document the evidence that he had that showed that he had received that tip from someone who had dined with Alito about the fact that the Hobby Lobby decision was coming and it was going to go in favor of Hobby Lobby. So, you know, it's very troubling what's happening in the Supreme Court, and groups like Alliance Defending Freedom, which are being bankrolled by entities like the Serva Foundation, are at the heart of this assailing of other people's rights. If you don't want to have an abortion, if you don't want to use contraception, if you don't want to get married to someone who is the same gender or sex as you, that is your freedom as an American.
Don't do it.
Why do these people want to impose their personal religious beliefs on other people as a matter of law, of legal requirement? It's extraordinary to me.
So you're not gonna think that this is them saying that, finally coming out and saying that they've found Jesus. That they've finally, after all of their hyper-religiosity and their preaching and all that, that now they've finally found Jesus and they're going to turn around and be a decent person. And, you know, as they pointed out, Jesus loved the people we hate. They no longer hate those people. This isn't that.
Well, you know, I don't know what's in anyone's heart, except for, I suppose, Jimmy Carter's heart, which he revealed on national television many years ago in describing the lust he had in his heart at some point. In general, like, I don't know what they have in their heart. I, you know, in general, believe that people who say they believe in Jesus, or they're Catholic, or they're Jewish, or they're Muslim or Buddhist or Hindu, like, I believe that that's their faith. But that's different than what an organization, a nonprofit organization, funds. And so whether the individuals involved in that ad or the executives at that foundation, like their own belief, their determination themselves to turn the other cheek or embrace people they hate which is, you know, an interesting way of really thinking about that. Maybe that's the other part of the question from the caller, but or from her. But the reality is that we'll see, right? We'll see what they fund this year, next year, the year after. And so that's why, you know, that PR campaign, it is a PR campaign by definition. It's a religious one, driven by to send a religious message, but it's one that appears to be at odds with some of the actions of the funders or the groups of the grantees of the organization. Now, in their defense, they would say that they're doing this with love. They're trying to, you know, stop abortion access because of love. They're trying to stop gay marriage because they believe people will go to hell, or they're trying to stop access to contraception because they've invented some notion that, you know, there's a line that they can't actually point to in the Bible that compels that result. But, you know, they claim a sincerity. In fact, you know, one of the other funders in this arena is a guy named Sean Feeler. He's a big hedge funder who has funded a bunch of these crisis pregnancy centers, which, you know, have been documented to provide misleading information to pregnant women about their pregnancy. But, you know, Feeler tells reporters that, you know, he's really sincere in his beliefs. And, you know, I have to accept that. But I also have to state that just because someone really sincerely wants to take away your rights doesn't make it OK.
Right. Just because they're sincere about it, it doesn't mean that they're not sincerely wrong.
That seems simple
to me. So last question I've got for you. Again, I go back to the money. You said that they're set up as a certain kind of corporation. Is this not in a moment where I've been saying this for years, it's time to start taxing these religious organizations and do it in a way that, because these are businesses, they're advertising. This is advertising during a Super Bowl where they spent $20 million. They got $100 million PR campaign. This isn't helping to feed the poor. This isn't helping to give clothes to the naked. This isn't about sheltering people. This is purely propaganda.
Well, you know, I'm going to say something really controversial, Rick, so let me just warn you in advance. I do think that we need to have substantial reform of the 501c3 and 501c4 nonprofits. And also the churches, which this is not a church per se in that same sense. It's a, you know, foundation, but the churches also have a tax exempt status, and they don't even have to file a 990, a tax disclosure of their revenue or their expenses. And that's just extraordinary. We have this massive amount of money flowing through these churches where Donald Trump wants to change the rules even further to allow these churches to be deployed as true political partisan arms without having, you know, without paying taxes or anything else. But the controversial thing I'm going to say is some of these sporting operations, these, you know, NFL, Major League Baseball and others, some of those are also, you know, charitable entities. They're nonprofits. Some of these huge hospitals are nonprofits, but they charge you the same amount as the for-profit hospital down the street. Some of these big universities have massive assets, and they're nonprofits. And so what we've allowed to happen is the massive accumulation of wealth in this nonprofit infrastructure in ways that are really largely unaccountable to the American people, and actually take money out of the treasury that could be deployed, even at a modest taxation rate, could be deployed to, you know, say, let's say spend $100 million on actually helping people who are homeless or who need job training or you know, don't have food in their pantry for their kids. Like, you know, these are choices, and right now our society has made a choice to allow this massive, you know, multi-billion dollar part of our society to be untaxed. And I think that should be revisited for sure for all of the types of groups that are nonprofits.
I'm right there with you. It wasn't not controversial to me. Good stuff. Lisa, I appreciate the time as always. Thanks for filling us in on this. I didn't know it went this deep, but I'm sure we'll be back again to talk more, because $100 million, they got a lot more to spend. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. Thanks so much, Lisa.
Thanks, Rick. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Lisa Graves. She is the executive director of True North Research, truenorthresearch.org, their website. Quick break, right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1913. James Riddle Hoffa was born to a coal miner in Brazil, Indiana. Tragedy struck the Hoffa home in 1920 when at age 7, young Jimmy lost his father. In 1924, like many families in Brazil, the Hoffa family moved to Detroit, Michigan in search of work. At the age of 14, Hoffa left school to help support his family, where he found work in a Kroger grocery store warehouse. At the young age of 19, he led the warehouse workers in a successful strike. A year later, he joined the Teamsters Union. He rose quickly through the ranks, becoming vice president in 1952 and then president in 1957. Under Hoffa's leadership, the Teamsters Union grew to represent more than 2 million workers. Hoffa took a strong stance against racial discrimination, both within the Teamsters Union and in American society. In 1958, he wrote a letter to Teamster Union locals asserting his stance. He wrote, "As Americans, we should be opposed to bigotry and racial discrimination at every turn, and do everything possible to make the Bill of Rights a reality for every citizen." In 1964, Hoffa was able to bring nearly all of the nation's truck drivers under the National Master Freight Agreement, one of the very first industry-wide, nationwide multi-employer agreements, a powerful bargaining strategy for these workers. That same year, Hoffa was convicted for bribery. Rumors swirled about his alleged connections to organized crime. After his prison sentence was commuted by President Richard Nixon, Hoffa mysteriously disappeared in 1975. There are many conspiracy theories about the disappearance, fueling many television specials, films, and books. But these allegations and mysteries cannot diminish the lasting legacy of Hoffa's unwavering commitment to working people. Today, his son serves as president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, carrying on his father's legacy. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, Lisa hit on something that prepare for here in the spring and summer, as these groups who are spending huge amounts of money on PR stunts. Like, look, those ads in the Super Bowl, again, nothing wrong with them. Great. If the people behind it actually believed it. But come spring and summer, expect there to be protests at your local CVS, Walgreens, at all of the places where people get their prescriptions. Expect it, because they're organizing. These folks behind this stuff are organizing around this. And why? So that your wives, your children don't get contraception. They're literally going to be protesting so that pharmacists don't distribute contraception. It's going to be the kind of gauntlets that I remember back, you know, in the 80s. That, you know, I remember a friend who went and had an abortion, and what she had to go through to get into that building was disgraceful. The people there who were there to harass and intimidate and threaten and, you know, all kinds of stuff. They're going to be doing that again. This time it's contraception. That's coming. That's their plan. They no longer have to go out in front of the clinics, because they're making sure those get shut down. State legislatures across the country are passing laws to ban abortion. Now it's the next stage. It's the next step. And contraception is that next step. Because, again, this is the control mechanism. It was never only about Roe. It was about Griswold. It was about a lot of the stuff that empowered young women to do the things that they want to do with their lives. So when I see this kind of money being spent on feel-good messaging to start, I got to tell you, I'm a little skeptical. The intention, a little skeptical, because you know what the people behind it, you know what they've done. So now to all of a sudden have this come to Jesus moment kind of makes you wonder. Anyway, want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Thanks for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.